The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jeff G Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? We are continuing on our adventure to review the totality of the Jordan Peterson against ATS debate. We are now in part two. It's a little different because part one, the burden of errors and lack of engagement was borne by Jordan Peterson. It was his fault that the debate was bad. I would argue that in the second portion, the ATS do a little poorly in that they engage with debates of Jordan Peterson, and you have to be able to tell, if you want to be a good debater, you have to be able to tell what is a bait and reject it and not engage. And you have to be willing to mic drop and say, I agree with you. And that's it. So you short the debate, you say, we're going to have to move on to another question because I don't disagree with you. Now, you can discuss then, you can lengthen it, and you can say in various ways, well, here's why I agree with you, and here's why it's not a problem that I agree with you. But they failed at doing this, and one of the reactions of a very young debater is they think they have to debate everything. They think they have to oppose anything that is claimed by the other side. No. We are in a world where you're not debating a stupid zombie who can be wrong on everything he believes. For sure, you are talking to a somewhat intelligent person who's capable of formulating some sentence. So you must agree with 99% of the things you believe in with that person. You have to focus on the disagreement. If you let that person bait you into debating things that you should agree with and that are true, then you look bad. As Reckles says, very exciting part two. Greatest Whitest points out to part deux. Yes, I gave it a little French name because someone yesterday was saying he wanted me to do more French content. Well, here, I'm giving it a French flair, but I'm still going to speak in English. Partie deux. Are you ready? Antizog says, Jordan Peterson taking L's from leftist. Yeah, in the end, he's coming with obvious statements, and he somewhat succeeds during this part of the debate, although he commits errors on other fronts, like when it gets into the whole Nazi Germany thing and he refuses to engage again, blurs further. We'll get to it. Macron getting slapped. I saw this in the news. I would cover it if it was a low news day, but since I'm doing the Jordan Peterson review, okay, Macron got slapped by his wife, which is, it's now very public that people are questioning whether it's a wife or a husband that he has. Wow. I still don't know what to think of it. Let me tell you, the pictures of his wife, some of them are sweating masculinity. So, yes, could be that that this is a trend, because in France, public personalities will not be exposed about this kind of thing for a long time. Because in France, there's this tradition that, oh no, this is private life. You cannot harass a prisoner, even if he was gay. We should not know this. And there's a kind of sexually libertine way of processing things in France, which I wouldn't be surprised if for 30 years this guy would have been successful being a trans, becoming the wife of the president. And it's entirely possible that the first person who could talk about it happened to be Candace Owens, or, you know, the journalistic equivalent in France who decided to cover this. A couple of news before we do the Jordan Peterson review. Breaking 9/11, President Trump says that Canada is considering the offer to become the 51st U.S. state in exchange for free Golden Dome protection. It will cost $61 billion if they remain a separate but unequal nation, but will cost $0 if they become our cherished 51st state. They are considering the offer. I don't think this is serious. I don't think that Canadian politicians will be suddenly abandoning all of their power and say, oh yeah, let's just stop having control of this entire nation and give it up to Donald Trump. Very, very unlikely. Although I would enjoy this. I would love if it could happen, but I think we're dreaming if we're thinking that this would happen. Am I going to die alone? A heartbreaking post on Too Afraid to Ask. I'm 28 years old, and many women would describe me as a loser. I still live with my parents and work a very undesirable job at Walmart. I used to be ambitious. I went to school for 6 years and got my bachelor's degree in computer science. I worked hard on getting good grades and even graduated with a 4.0 GPA. I'm proud of myself for that. But my graduation was nearly 1.5 years ago, and I'm now working a shitty $14 an hour job at Walmart with high school kid who earned the same as me. My dreams were kind of crushed when I started applying for entry-level jobs after graduation and couldn't land a single damn interview. I had no internship or work experience to use, so I eventually kind of just gave up. What else was I supposed to do? I haven't applied for anything with my degree in 6 to 7 months. I just don't think I'm capable of landing a job with my degree at this point. It feels worthless, and I can't see why any woman around my age would want to date a guy like me that has nothing to offer. A good, steady job that pays well is about the only thing I could have brought to the table to attract someone. In terms of looks, I'm incredibly short at 5'4" in height. I have bad skin that I do try to control. I take care of my hygiene and make sure I smell good and dress well. I just can't do anything about my bad looks and short height, so I'm not attracting anyone that way. My life is just incredibly lonely. I have no friends and struggle to socialize well. I don't even know what I would talk about with someone I'd be interested in dating. I've never been in a relationship before either, and I'm a virgin. Sometimes I feel like I'm too far gone and nobody would ever want to date me. Realistically, am I going to die alone? Should I come to terms with that so I can try to find a way to live with being lonely? Well. Yes, the hiring world is broken, says Naberius. Absolutely. Incredible. It's gatekept by a bunch of super normie woman. And really, you have to have an in. I kept seeing these state positions being fulfilled, like low-level stuff, like janitor in a hospital, and the janitor in a hospital is the cousin of the woman who does the hiring. It's a fucking headache, and just out of pure talent or diplomas, you're gonna get nowhere. The whole market has been taken by basically tribal, familial, caste levels of corruption. And it doesn't matter whether you're good or not. It's you have to face this fucking woman who will hire her cousin, or the guy that knows this guy that knows this guy, or the girl that knows this girl that knows this girl. It's a fucking scam. the whole thing, yes, from university Charles Garrity to the hiring process, which is why at some point I stopped giving a shit in my life. Now, when I stopped giving a shit in my life, I started being successful. So I would say to this guy who's 28 years old, you're not done. You're not done at all. The island isn't done with you, John. You have to come back. You can be reborn. I thought that I was destroyed and on the street when I was 35 years old. And so you're 28. You have 7 years in advance on me. You can be reborn now. To be reborn, you have to stop giving a shit, become an asshole. You have to, and yes, there's going to be women who date a Walmart employee. So just be an asshole to them and be a little more careless. You probably care too much. You have to get out of your cocoon as a baby and become an adult. And you have to stop giving a shit, really. And as far as your job, you know, you can either continue in Walmart or you can do stuff on the side, look for contract work, look for opportunities for self-employment. It's not going to be easy. You're not just going to be seated in a job that's given to you and everything works all of a sudden. You have to grind, and you're not going to be able to grind effectively if you're not somewhat of an asshole. Also grind in the dating process. Also, you know, shuffle through in the dating process. It's a very bad position to be depressed and staying home like this. It's not going to get you anywhere. So do something. Something productive. Doesn't matter what it is, really. Now, the big problem of employment at Walmart is it takes 8 hours of your day. And then you come home and you feel like you've done enough. But the reality is you should do a little more. You should find a hobby that you pursue that is super good for you or your cognition or whatever, or alternative jobs, self-employment opportunities, little jobs on the side, whatever. But you need to start churning the machine to get yourself out of this position. And part of it may be to do savings, for strategically save money for a while. You're living at your parents' house. That's perfect. For that kind of moment, you save the money, you invest it in Bitcoin, and then your life starts rolling. Then eventually your Bitcoin makes much money, much profits, and you can get out of being in this constant circle of exploitation. Rick Verger says he needs a sexy hobby like bartending or surfing or anything, photography, playing musical instruments. Yes, definitely. Something like this would allow him to explore his fun dimension, which ladies will love. They will love that you're something, whatever, a surfer. And of course, surfer is not my specialty. I attract women based on other hobbies, like annoying people and being edgy on the internet is my go-to approach. But of course, he doesn't have to do what I do. He can go the surf way or whatever. But yeah, nothing is desperate for a male before 35. Because anything is possible. You can be a loser up to 35 and your life can turn around. And anyways, you're not at your peak value at 28 anyhow, no matter what. So the future is brighter. Tell yourself this, you have 7 years before you're at the point of no return. And in fact, as I get older, as I get into my 40s, and now I have this beautiful girlfriend who just came to me and who is the perfect woman. Literally the perfect woman. I could have designed her, could have coded every line of her, and she wouldn't be better than she is. That has come into my life at 40 years old. So 35 is not even the end. For a man, it's kind of the beginning in a way. Because men will attract younger women who can come to them, and you just have to have your life together, to be attractive and to be able to be a provider. That's all you need. You have 7 years to become a potential provider of a low-level mobile home if you want. So, and you know, there is white trash that will come to live with you in a mobile home. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, it's claimed that J1 and F1 visa are positive uses of immigration, particularly in the sciences, yet no one points out the possibility that a huge portion of the replication crisis is due to these programs. Oh yeah, science is sick. I wouldn't say that the J1, F1 system is worse, but it's in the ambient problematic science. And just like the US-based scientists are trying to elevate themselves by sometimes self-deceiving, by sometimes cheating a little bit on the data, cheating a lot on the data sometimes, you have the same phenomenon from the outside. They just come in on a J1 or whatever. So yes, the whole system of science being so demanding on, oh yeah, you have to have proven something spectacular with 5,000 neurons. And the system has become so demanding that it's pushing everyone toward lies and toward useless pursuit, really, because you have this whole bureaucratic frame where you have to propose a grant proposal. And so that forces your experiment to basically be stupid, because it has to plead, it has to please an old boomer scientific bureaucrat. So by definition, if your study gets a grant from the government, it's probably not so good. Like, this is exactly the kind of scientific project that the government will not fund. Too revolutionary, too intelligent, too cost-saving. Because if you had people suddenly start to believe in the theory of phenotypic revolutions, which is correct, what does it tell us? Well, it tells us we should stop science. We should stop genetic science at the very least, and we should stop trying to modify ourselves. We should stop trying to build a library of our genes and our phenotypes, because eventually we're going to be tempted to use that library for modifying ourselves, and we're going to enter in this non-evolutionary race forward in the sculpting of humanity, which I describe in my book as extremely dangerous. Now, do you think a scientific bureaucrat who's in charge of departments of NIH funding wants to hear this? No. The bureaucrat wants to hear that science is always good. Let's do more science. Let's keep doing science. I need new money for new science every year. It's like, well, you know, accept this true theory, and we could reduce by billions of dollars the budget of any advanced nation, because we stop genetic science because we know it's going to destroy us eventually. But people never look to me for the answers. Modern day Toronto is proof that this multiculturalism shit isn't working. We got people in the city protesting and literally fighting over conflicts and shit that has nothing to do with Canada, Russia, Ukraine, the Eritrean brawl, Hindus, Sikh, Israel, Palestine, etc. Different groups segregate themselves so much that entire regions in the GTA are now dominated by a single group. Markham is East Asian, Brampton is South Asians, Vaughan is Europeans, etc. People are struggling to find jobs and or places to rent simply because they don't belong to the preferred ethnic group. All these different groups don't actually like one another. They tolerate each other at best and only interact when absolutely necessary. Even in this sub, mans will say the most foul shit in order to disrespect an entire group just because someone made the joke or said something that offended the other person. People don't come to Canada to be Canadian. They come to Canada to be whatever they were before living in Canada. There's little to actual loyalty to this country. this is the this is the most fascinating thing with this liberal overtake of the nation and this demographic attack that infinite immigration is. It's that at the end of it, all you get is racism. Because you're replacing the least racist people in the fucking world. White people are the least racist people in the fucking world. Indians, I mean, Indians, to you and I, white people, when we look at Indians, they all look the same to me. They're all the same shade of brown, and they all have the same hair, but they succeed at being Indian, at being racist internally. They have caste systems, and they hate each other, and they develop gangs, and they hate Hispanics, and the Asians hate the blacks, and the blacks hate the Asians. So in the end, hilariously, they are fighting against white people and, oh, white racism. White people are the only people who can be racist because they have power. It's like, yeah, okay. When you're going to have removed all of our power, what will be left for you? A bunch of gangs that, yes, it's becoming super hard for even a white person to be finding an apartment because, oh, in this section of the town, it's Indian owners and they only allow Indians in. And then you get to the Indian doctor and he has an Indian secretary and an Indian assistant. He's never going to hire a single white person in his life. So you have this overtake by gangs, basically, and it's going to be gangs against gangs. And at the end of it, you have more racism than you started with. Yeah, because the only place in which there's less racism is a very, very white nation. A very, very white nation is it Ted's with racism. But the browns and the blacks, they want is it Ted. After Nick Fuentes went viral across the platform, Instagram has begun removing videos from his show and taking down clipper channels that post his content. Massive attack on free speech on Instagram. Identitarian channels being totally banned in Europe. Nick Fuentes in America. We have a YouTube channel, Real Canadian Politics, that has just been nuked on YouTube, just gone like it never existed. YouTube nukes top Canadian political account after state-funded media complaints. Unbelievable. It's like, yeah, we tried building alternative politics forever, and what we learned is that they will find an excuse. It doesn't matter. I was doing all my best to respect the rules. Eventually, they get to you because they want to. It's not about the rules. It's not about hate speech. These people were not into hate speech at all. They got banned because there was once an AI-generated video that they mistook for a real one. But they're going to find an excuse. If you do hours and hours of content, they're going to find an excuse. And ultimately, it's because politics is a cartel. And everything is a cartel. Everything is illegal. The entire industry, employment, universities, nothing is happening over a free market. And we're supposed to have these anti-cartel laws, but they don't work because the prosecutors won't apply them. The fact is that we live under massive gangster cartels. And there's a bunch of people who still control what can be said to you. And they still can make sure that people are getting isolated to small audiences, because their ideas are too dangerous for them. And they're not dangerous in the criminal sense. They're not dangerous in the sense of violence. They're dangerous because it makes them lose public support. So the public space is bought out. And it's a fucking cartel. And it's frustrating. with $1,000 per baby Trump accounts, GOP buys into big government redistribution. I disagree with this policy. I'm all for encouraging baby making. I'm against the state, but of all the things you can do with state money, encouraging baby making is not a bad idea at all. But this is different. It's not $1,000 that gets into the actual making of the baby. It's $1,000 that is put in a savings account that leftists will be, from the deep state, will be able to determine we're investing this in this. Oh, why wouldn't you want to buy these top 500 stocks? And it's going to be very bad decisions. Because it's basically the state pouring money into DEI-approved corporations, creating a fake skewed market. The reality is, if you had $1,000 and you invested it in Bitcoin for your child would be pretty well off when he becomes an adult. So Bitcoin is the best investment, but these savings accounts, I doubt that they will allow people to do rational decisions with the money. It's going to be state controlled and central controlled, and you're going to have no say on it. So it's fictive $1,000 injected into the stock market, basically. And we were about to destroy the fucking stock market. Like, it's absolutely sick. Michael Saylor is absolutely right. Bitcoin should be draining all of the energy, all of the monetary energy from the stock market. The stock market should be a very specialized thing where you are specialized in a domain of accomplishments like mining, and you're really interested in mining companies and you buy mining companies. It shouldn't be the case that everyone is pouring their money into this Ponzi scheme. There should be something better for it, and Bitcoin has now emerged as something better. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the Streamlabs link under the description below. Streamlabs.com/JFGtonight/tip is my favorite platform for receiving super chats for the show. Alternatively, feel free to use the dollar button on Rumble. We are now getting ready to review part 2 of the Jordan Peterson debate with atheists. So how we concluded last night, part one, our conclusion is Peterson redefines terms like God. He redefined term of God to become conscience. And then he refuses to engage in order to reach invalid conclusions through equivocation. Because if I say, well, God for me means hot dog. And hot dog means God. And I'm like, as an atheist, you don't understand when you deny God. You don't understand that you're denying hot dogs. And it's like, well, if the atheist wanted to say that he doesn't deny hot dogs, that he believes in hot dogs, he would have said hot dogs. He wouldn't have said God. When he says God, he means God in a certain way, and you have to take his definition of God, not yours, because yours doesn't matter. You can, whenever you shuffle definitions and terms, you disconnect from the reality of what others have said before your redefinition. So going forward, when you've redefined the term, you are the only one who can say anything about it, and it's only within the purview of your discussion that this redefinition makes sense. You cannot go back in time and say, oh, those people who said they were atheists a year ago are now wrong by my definition. Your definition is conscience. No atheist in the world denies conscience. So that's it. Part one, Peterson loses. In part two, we will see that Peterson is still slimy. But centrally, what he's trying to do is to bait. He's trying to bait the atheist into opposing something that they should not. because he's making a true statement here. Greatest Whitest Nerd has sent a super chat. Oh, can I play it?
I don't have anything special to say. This is just a donation.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Greatest Whitest. You have been absolutely generous with the show, and I appreciate the claim of Jordan Peterson is morality and purpose cannot be found within science. And that the only way to interact with this claim, if you're one of the atheists, should be you sit in front of Jordan Peterson, you say, what you're stating here is the Hume distinction between morality and facts, and it's true. I agree with it. Now, they will get trapped into the reflex of the young debater, which is, oh, whatever my opponents say, I need to question it. Without even specifying if I believe in it, I need to question it like I'm opposed to it.
Purpose cannot be found within science.
Now that I use Monday
you
Service, AI makes solving tickets my form of meditation. Monday Service is a ticketing
meditation
platform that helps.
What is up, Mr. Canada?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
What's
How are
your
you?
Name?
Brian. I think it's interesting that you say that morality and purpose can't be found in science. Actually,
no, within science.
Within, sir. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Purpose, I actually grant you, because purpose is subjective, right? Unless you want to boil it down to the purpose of life is just to procreate, right? Sure, whatever. Morality is actually something that we do see. We actually have examples of Neanderthals and older individuals found in a...
See, he's trying to oppose, to say, oh, well, we see morality. But of course, that's not what Jordan Peterson means. Of course, you can see morality. You can see people making moral decisions empirically. But what he means is morality is not objectively binding. There's not going to be a fact that makes you objectively bound to a certain moral, view or moral axiom.
A tribe, missing an arm, missing teeth, still alive somehow in his 40s, 50s, right? Typically.
So atheists often fall for this trap of, oh no, science tells us how morality evolves. No, it doesn't matter because behavior evolves. Now, if Jordan Peterson had said, you cannot possibly become a moral being from physical events, that the atheist should contest. But that's not what he's saying. He's saying science as a process is not designed. It's designed to find facts. It's not designed to find purpose or moral desires.
You're a Neanderthal. You can't eat. You can't hunt. You die. Right? But we know that members of his tribe take care of him. Right? So we know that at some level, early in our evolutionary history...
Loose assumption on the idea that because you found a skeleton of a Neanderthal that's missing teeth, it means that they were caring for their handicaps. Oh, it's like, well, it doesn't even begin to provide an answer. And it's not a solid basis to base your theory of morality on.
We actually developed altruism. We have examples of chimpanzees who actually have a basic understanding of fairness, right? If you give a chimpanzee two grapes, right, and his buddy gets three.
So you're saying that moral behavior can evolve, but Jordan Peterson will tell you that he didn't deny this.
Right, he actually freaks out, right?
Because is the chimpanzee using science to determine his morality? No. You can study the chimpanzee with science, but the chimpanzee isn't using science to determine that a banana should be shared with the other chimpanzees.
But you give both chimps three grapes and they're good. We have examples of parrots.
Except for the greedy chimps.
Except for the greedy chimps.
They want four grapes.
They want four grapes. You know, those do exist, right? But we have similar...
Are they talking about the Jews?
Examples where we do animal tests, right? And
so morality is intrinsic.
I think...
So it precedes science.
I think that... Actually, a better way to define it would be that social animals, which we are, right,
yeah,
require some level of morality or
into what? Into, I'm not disagreeing.
Sure.
Why do they require that?
Because it's the only way that social groups can actually survive, right?
That's my point with regards to science. Thank you very much.
Is that?
Precisely the point that you just made, that science has to exist within a moral framework that isn't in itself scientific.
How's that not scientific?
So, see, if science has been created by humans, that if chimpanzee had some form of morality, then humans were moral beings before they were scientific beings. And so therefore morality exists only outside of science. It doesn't need science for anything. Very clever of Jordan Peterson here. So here, part two, bad argument from the atheist side misconnects with Peterson's precise claim. The precise claim is correct, so you should not oppose it. Yes, even modern scientists who are very much into atheism will tell you that the Hume distinction holds. So if it, what Jordan Peterson is doing here is kind of opposing Sam Harris and kind of saying, you know, you're not going to find in science answers to what you should do.
David.
Well, because it's not derived from the scientific process, as you just indicated.
It's not derived from the scientific process.
Well,
it's
on,
the fact
that
we are social animals. We need that to exist as a group.
I agree.
Right?
But
sure.
You pointed to the morality of Neanderthals,
mm-hmm.
to the morality of chimpanzees.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't derive that from science.
They don't need to. That's not
That's
how that works.
That's my point.
Scientific.
So this guy is disconnected from the point. The point is morality and purpose can't be found within science. Showing that a chimpanzee has some morality shows that a pre-scientific being had morality.
Science explains it.
So no, science doesn't explain morality.
It doesn't explain how social animals would need to be.
Well, that's a complicated question.
Yeah, so see here, Jordan Peterson overstated, because if he had held to his, well, science can't explain morality, then you would have had Jordan Peterson, you would have had him caught in a trap. Unfortunately, Jordan Peterson, you know, recovered and realized how wrong he was. But I would have loved if he got caught in that trap. Now, if you say morality cannot explain how science cannot explain how morality evolves, then you would be wrong. But that's not what his claim is.
But we see it, though.
Yeah, but explaining the evolution of morality and explaining morality itself aren't the same thing.
Okay, so you're asking.
So here, I mean, I can't believe how these people are talking past each other. It's quite simple. We already have the terms. We've gone through these debates. What Jordan Peterson is trying to say is there is no objective scientific fact that will lead you to an objective set of morals. That is how we phrase it normally.
Why does this happen?
Yes, that's more accurate.
Because we're social animals and we need to be.
Yeah, but there's more to it than that.
Is there?
Sure. For example, so we're moral animals that have a sense of the future?
Sure.
Okay, that makes
sense. So I believe that this is not at all a good argument for Jordan Peterson. An animal can be given a sense of the future, including morality, including non-morality or whatever. An animal can acquire this through evolution.
Makes us unique, and that structures our morality.
No.
It doesn't make us unique. The brain is a future predictive machine. The brain of animals does so. Even plants can predict the future in adjusting their parameters to just catch the seasons right as they are happening on Earth.
Actually, there are other animals that can predict the future.
Or not
predict
really.
No, tigers. Actually, there was a tiger.
Jordan is completely wrong on this. So let's note this. Animals can't predict the future. False statement by Peterson. So we have a balanced performance here with this black guy. One error on the black guy's side. One error on Jordan Peterson's side.
Tiger at the SF Zoo that killed somebody. And so
hunting
actually,
animals.
No. Kids threw shit at the tiger, the tiger actually plotted its escape, and it found the kid.
The problem, when you get into those weeds, I wouldn't get into those weeds. This guy is trying to attribute a kind of consciousness to the tiger, and then you can say, oh, well, maybe the tiger has these instincts and these reactions to be fleeting. Maybe he didn't know that he was going to get catched. And so in my approach for this black guy, if I had been stuck in this debate space, I would have done it different. What I do is I take snails or I take plants. Would have been a better argument for instead of tiger. Because the problem is with tiger, you entertain the false impression very often in people who are not very well educated in biology, like Jordan Peterson. You entertain this false idea that anthropomorphism is a sin and that you may be attributing consciousness to the tiger. It's like, no, you don't need consciousness, nor a tiger, nor a human, to talk about future predictability within biology. Take a snail, you know, give him some shocks in a place of an aquarium, he's going to start avoiding this place of the aquarium. He now has acquired a predictive model of the world, saying, this place of the aquarium, electric shock. Take plants that are shooting, you know, strategically flowers just at the end of the fall to produce one last fruit just in time for the timing of the winter, which will kill them. Future prediction can be acquired through evolution. And there are some predictive machines in biology that are very hard-coded. Like you could think, yeah, the case of a fruit being produced by a plant last second as the winter comes, that is a very hard-coded thing. You probably would have it in a laboratory environment where you don't have winters, where the winter ends up not coming, you know? But it can also, evolution, just like it can evolve hard-coded solutions, it can evolve very plastic solutions, very complex ones. So, for example, the snail avoiding a place of the aquarium, it's through a very general mechanisms of learning. Before humans gave electric shocks to snails, snails had probably never been exposed to at least artificial electric shocks, perhaps shocks from an eel, but certainly they were not exposed to human-generated, copper-induced electric shocks. And yet, through their broad machine of future predictability capability, snails are able to learn a model of the world with things to avoid.
Saying that animals can't think.
Okay.
No, but they can think of the future.
See, the psychologist will always bring it back to think. But it doesn't matter whether the plant thinks or whether the snail thinks. That's why you take the snail. That's why you don't take the tiger. It's because then he cannot escape. You're like, yeah, you know what? The snail is predicting the future, whether he knows it or not.
Future, yeah. Is what I'm saying.
Well, voted out by the majority.
Thank you, man.
Good man. Yep.
So overall, a poor performance because bad choices here by the debater facing Jordan.
Jordan Peterson, how you doing?
How you doing, man?
My name's Luke. Nice to meet
Good
you.
To see you.
706 on the regular chat says, I have a 6-pack of Snickers ice cream in the freezer. I would recommend to eat the 6 Snickers ice cream immediately. Eat all of them. Don't make any reservation for the future. Just eat them now.
Luke, so your claim that morality and purpose can only be found in science is a little shaky, because I think that your claim is really being framed to be morality and purpose can only be found in religion. Is that how you're kind of framing it?
I would say that the domain of religion is the domain of morality and purpose. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And also that science is actually structured, at least in part technically, to eliminate such considerations from it.
So at least here we're approaching kind of definitionally the Hume distinction. And then the right approach here would be to say, okay, religion is its domain of expression is morality. But there are also other ways to get to morality, right? Without religion, without believing in a god. And then you could introduce principles, preferences, moral nihilism, preferences emerging from natural selection, and those are as legitimate as having the concept of a god.
It's purview a priori.
Okay.
Right? That's why we define science as value free.
Mm-hmm.
But that has to be wrong because scientists have to prioritize their attention towards something before they can even engage in observation.
Okay.
And
that's a side point. I would agree with Jordan Peterson here. Scientists cannot be objective. They have their own motivations. They have their own instinct, attention being driven here or there. You know, they're pursuing not just the truth, but they're pursuing the truth from a local perspective where they have to pay attention. They have to concentrate on one problem rather than another.
And that act of prioritization of attention is a value-predicated act. And so I can continue. There's all sorts of things we have to assume about science before it can take place.
Okay, so what I'm specifically pointing out here is about religion in particular, since you yourself are a Christian, right?
That's, people debate about that, and I generally don't discuss it publicly.
Okay, I understand that. And me, myself, I am a former young earth creationist fundamentalist.
Oh, yeah.
So I have experience in this. I used to run a TikTok channel directed about apologetics, about the Bible, specifically in this type of facet with morality, evolution.
It's amazing. I mean, this guy is young. It's amazing that he had a whole part of his life where he was a TikToker actively pushing for creationism. And now he's on the atheist side. It's absolutely amazing how quick this generation is shifting sometimes.
And such, and going back and forth with that. So in the Bible, it talks a lot about slavery, right?
Yes.
Yes. So in that, it teaches you how to take care of a slave. Rather than saying slavery's wrong, I think
it
should
say that.
No, it
says that in the story of Moses.
It says slavery is incorrect. It says it's immoral.
Well, that's why Moses leads his people away from slavery.
But why?
I don't know that he says slavery is wrong. The story of Moses may say the slaves want to liberate themselves, and those particular slaves wanted to liberate themselves from slavery, but it doesn't mean that it's wrong as a whole.
Why does the Bible predicate and tell people exactly how to take care of a slave? Isn't that immoral? Wouldn't you say that culturally we've evolved as a species, as he said earlier about empathy?
Yeah.
So this is this is why these ex-Christian atheists are very bad. It's a very bad direction to be trying to out moral religion. Now, it's a tradition. We've heard this from Richard Dawkins. You know, try to make the case that, hey, the God of the Old Testament is evil, or try to make the case that, oh, there's these things in the Bible about slavery. Basically, trying to make the case that whatever emerges outside of religion as morality is more moral than Christianity. There are several problems with this direction, but ultimately you're trying to win a moral point, which you don't have to, because Jordan Peterson has made no moral point. He's making a point of systems. He's saying morality does not belong in science. He's not trying to look good morally. He's not arguing that, hey, Christianity is superior moral. And this is what you're trying to address. When you bring up how there are bad things in the Bible, therefore, you're trying to make a case that Christianity is a bad form of morals. That would be a good counter to someone claiming that it is a good form of moral. But that's not what Jordan is claiming.
Yeah, I would say that the reason we evolved, so to speak, away from slavery was because the West was founded on Judeo-Christian morality.
And see, anything that you can bring from society as a good development, Jordan will be able to reframe it in terms of a downstream consequence of Christianity. And, you know, I don't even disagree. Is it possible that slaves were liberated in the U.S. because the U.S. was a white Christian nation? Probably. It probably had to be the case. Probably any other people in any other religion would not have led to some sort of an awakening around slavery.
And yeah. The presumption that every person was made in the image of God. Wouldn't you and say so slavery itself became immoral, and that was established by Protestant Christians.
So, poor argument. Debater trying to paint Christianity as bad morally when Jordan isn't making any claim about this.
In the UK, who then convinced the UK government for 200 years to go to war on slavery.
And wouldn't you say that this is about the cultural evolution of humans in general rather than just Christianity?
No, I think it's the flowering of the ideas that were embedded in the biblical texts across long...
So see, downstream consequence of Christianity, ultimately, we fought slavery because we were Christians.
Spans of time.
I feel like this is just humans editing based on the cultural evolution.
Absolutely bad performance. Don't ever say I feel that. Unless you are being sarcastic. Never use I feel that as an alternative in a debate. Because it doesn't matter. I don't even need to oppose or object to what you're saying. You are already whispering to the audience. You know, that's just my way of looking at things. I feel that. You cannot do a debate with this word, with these words.
What do you mean by just?
Just?
Yeah, just humans.
Well, humans. Editing. Well, based on culture and history, right? We get better.
Well, they did do it based on culture and history, but culture and history have their foundations too.
Like the only... if you're going to use I feel that, you need to make a statement that is so out there that the humorous component of it is obvious and that the sarcasm of it is obvious. Like, if I would be in a debate, I would first start with a factual argument where I'm convinced and I'm stating the truth. And if I want to say something like, I feel that, it's going to have to be on a very provocative claim that really doesn't matter to the debate.
Well, yeah, but we're talking about slavery. So many people bolstered it based on
everyone
the Bible.
And now you're finding yourself doing a liberal, leftist, woke argument. He has no choice because it's like, now Peterson has affirmed the causal relationship between Christianity and non-slavery. Now he has to pedal back to kind of get back to the moral high ground. And he's trying to argue, well, you know, religious people, Christians bolstered. They helped slavery continue in spite of being Christians.
Based on the Bible, they looked at it and they justified it in the United States and the Deep South. They justified slavery based on the Bible.
Yeah, but the main thrust of Protestant thought in particular was stringently against slavery, and it was about...
And here Jordan Peterson wins, unfortunately, because there weren't... slavery wasn't a widespread practice to the point where 90% of Christians were slave owners. As far as I can tell, less than 10% of the population at all times were slave owners, active slave owners.
About the only movement in the history of the human race that had an anti-slavery...
So whatever you say about slave owners, by definition, cannot be... put on the back of Christianity, because the non-slave owners were a vast majority, and they were Christians too.
Which was driven by humans and their understanding
that's one
of
way
morality.
Well, it depends.
It's the same with women's suffrage. I mean, women's in the patriarchy.
What do you mean it was driven by humans? Humans drove slavery too.
Yes, exactly. So
there's no argument there. If slavery and anti-slavery were both driven by humans, what does your claim that they were driven by humans have to do with it?
Evolving morality based on the culture that within the society.
You're not gonna be able to make an evolutionary argument that the world got better from non-Christianity, because Christianity has such an imprint on Western culture that it's undistinguishable. You don't have a separate experiment. You don't have a control group. You don't know what would have happened to civilization if there was no Christianity. What if I told you that we're in 2025, and if you remove Christianity, there are still slaves in 2025? Maybe. That's certainly the point that Jordan Peterson is making, and it's a credible one. You certainly can't affirm that you have isolated an evolutionary effect on human morals, leading us toward the woke left and leading us toward civil rights liberation that is non-Christian, because you haven't isolated Christianity out.
That they live.
Okay, fine.
So with
I
women's suffrage as
happen.
Well is a very similar topic in the Bible. There are denominations in Christianity, such as Pentecostal movement, which do bolster women to be pastors, right? Which I think that's a great thing to do. But
unfucking believable. Those are the people. It's a bunch of, just like Nick Fuentes was saying, they're a bunch of fucking glowy liberal atheists, woke atheists. Holy shit.
Most like to disregard.
Where do you
women.
Think the idea that human beings were sufficiently equal to all vote and not be slaves came from?
Humans.
Yeah, but so did the idea of slavery.
So did the idea of God.
Fine, but what's your point? Like, you're not making an argument. You're just saying all thoughts come from humans, regardless of the thoughts.
It's not driven by a higher power. It's driven on our experiences
Define
as
higher.
Humans, which is what is best for all people.
Is it driven by conscience?
It could be, which conscious is also something that has evolved over time. And I think that's something that does evolve within morality and empathy.
Okay, I don't understand the point that you're making.
My point is that God influenced slavery. People looked at the Bible and went, this is moral because God says so, just like women's suffrage.
There's lots
and
of
just like homosexuality.
All human societies were slave-owning, so you can't blame that on the Bible.
If humanity decided...
Oh, wait, address that first.
What,
all
about slavery?
All human societies were slavers, so you can't blame that on the Bible.
Well, you can say it bolstered it.
Well, not...
So, you can't even say that. Because if slavery was so omnipresent in the world that whether you had a Bible in your hand or not, you would find it regular and normal, then the Bible has no causal role. Then it really doesn't matter if one slave owner in the South said, I'm having these slaves because it's written in the Bible. That may have been his reasoning, but someone there would have owned some slave even without the Bible. So the Bible has no causal role here. Jordan Peterson wins. Peterson wins. Bible can't be shown to have causal role in slavery. And even if it was shown, you could also show that it had then a more important role in the liberation, the anti-slavery, and that on balance, Christianity has been largely good for slaves rather than bad.
If you look at the broad sweep of history, because it was the Protestant Christians
based
in
on their
the
interpretation
UK,
of the Bible.
It was the Protestant Christians
which evolves over time.
Let's pause there. You've been voted out by the majority. Okay.
Thankfully, is now voted out. These past apologists tend to be very bad, except James. We love James. James, who was coming on this show sometimes as a guest, we love him. But they don't make good atheist arguments.
Well, it was great talking with you,
nice
sir.
Nice talking to you, too.
Yes.
Dr. Peterson?
Good to see you, man.
Pleasure.
What's your name?
Brian. So the first thing I would like to say is I would like to engage in this discussion in a symbiotic manner. I would not like to engage where there is one clear winner and one clear loser. Emotions are activated and it ultimately comes about ego. So I'm just saying I'm really trying to understand your position and I would just like you to really try.
Sigh and throw. We don't care.
Try to understand my position.
Deal.
That's all moral fagging, by the way. It's so annoying. Why aren't people a little more asshole-y and a little more efficient?
Okay, sounds good. With that,
I'm not saying I'm not saying you shouldn't approach debate with this attitude he just stated. I'm saying stating it is fucking soy.
If you're
because
saying...
Because in the end, the discussion is going to be respectful or it won't. But show it through your behavior. Don't show it through your fucking words. I'm tired of fucking words. I'm tired of these normies always explaining what they're doing morally. Like, oh, do you want a fucking medal?
That morality and purpose cannot come from science. Is the opposite of that true, that morality and purpose can only come from God?
That is interesting. See, interesting opening, because asking about implication of the claim, since that claim will not be contested, it's Hume distinction. Philosophically, it's very tight. It's not going to lead to a disagreement. But let's talk about what you're trying to imply. Are you trying to imply that therefore morality can only be found in religion?
That's a way of defining it, yes.
Okay.
So boom, now he's been pinned down. Now we can have an argument about this.
Right, that's good. So I would say that with regard to the first claim, say, atheists don't understand what they're rejecting. Because mm-hmm. I would say, by definition, God is the unity upon which moral claims are based. That's okay. A definition, right?
Okay, if there is a God...
By the way, that's also a different definition than what we've reviewed last night, where the definition of God was conscience. So now it's the unity upon which moral claims are based, and so it's the kind of internal self-justification system of axiomatic web that leads to objective morality. Very different from conscience.
God, what is the purpose of life?
Well, in the Christian tradition, the purpose of life is to engage in voluntary, upward self-sacrifice so that the kingdom of heaven can be established on earth.
So
basically, Jordan Peterson here taking a kind of Jesus Christ self-sacrifice, trying to build the kingdom of Jesus on earth through self-sacrifice. I think he's pushing a little bit on the angle of the self-sacrifice. But okay, that's his definition of Christian.
So you're trying to make it to heaven and avoid hell?
Yes, that's okay. That's a good way of thinking about it.
What is the purpose of heaven? Do you understand?
Well,
so here's the deal.
At minimum, it's the opposite of endless suffering. How about that?
Okay, and so should we not try to achieve infinite suffering on planet Earth? And if we can achieve infinite suffering on planet Earth without God, if we can do that without God, then does that defeat your claim?
Well, yeah, except that it doesn't. You circumvent.
It's not a very intelligent direction because it's so loose that Jordan Peterson will have no problem getting away with it. He's trying to make the case, what if I could show you that you can be more happy without a concept of heaven? The problem is you're not going to be able to show this. There will always be a hook back for Jordan Peterson to be able to say, well, without the concept of heaven, you wouldn't have gotten to that happiness. Because without the concept of heaven, you would be, like 500 years before you're born, there would be hell on earth. 500 years before you're born, there would be Nazis winning. There would be whatever you can imagine as the worst thing possible happening on earth. And you're always going to be able, even without evidence, because there's no evidence on the other side, you're not going to be able to say, well, I have evidence that we can be more happy without religion. Because, okay, you're going to find one person on a bunch of people on a survey that may say that, but then Jordan is going to come back and say, well, but have they formed a society? Have they been lawfully following their principles and reaching happiness without God for thousands of years? He's always going to be able to argue that on the long term, society benefits from a concept of heaven.
prevented my initial definition, because I said that by definition, God was the unified source of morality. And so if we engage in a moral exercise...
And when you're talking about morality, though, when you really reverse engineer it and you get it down to its root, you're a psychologist, yeah. It really seems like it just has to deal with motivation. People are saying there is a God, there
is... It's more specific than that.
So let me ask you this. So if there is a God and there is a moral code and it doesn't come at your benefit, are you going to follow it?
It depends on how you define your benefit.
If it's going to come at your expense, would you still follow it?
Expense.
If God came down and said, here is my moral code and you should follow it, but even if you follow it, you are still going to end up in hell.
That is a bad, bad line of argument around a hypothetical God. That forces you into hell. There's going to be all sorts of escapes available to Jordan Peterson. You know, hypotheticals have their limits. And if you're faced with a Christian who believes that there's some sort of inherent self-consistency in the concept of God, you're not going to produce a hypothetical of a God that forces you to hell. Because... That is a different God than the God that Jordan believes in.
Are you going to follow it?
Well, that was the question that was put to Job and to Christ, right? They were required to withstand trials that would break anyone.
And so there he is. There he is telling him, I mean, it's exactly what Jesus Christ had the choice to do. He chose to endure a suffering of self-destruction voluntarily, in a way reminiscent of hell. He has endured some form of hell because he had the perception of his obligation to do so.
And maintain their upward orientation regardless.
And they did that with the motivation of believing that this omnipotent, all-loving God would somehow turn it into a benefit. So they still did it solely for their benefit. So
no,
when you
not, well,
yes,
let's
they
define,
did. Yes,
hang
they
on,
did.
Hang on. Let's define benefit. Like, if I did something for your sister.
Now, this is where you don't want to be brought into those weeds in an atheist debate. He's now stuck to acknowledge that Jesus exists, that he self-sacrificed, that he did so because he had a false person. He had a delusion about having a God that was asking him to do this. It's way too deep for the original claim, which is morality and purpose can't be found within science. Attributing self-interest to Jesus is going to bring you nowhere with respect to this initial claim.
Would that
Thank
be
you so
your
much, good game username for the $20 donation. Very appreciated.
Benefit? Like, how are you defining your benefit? Do you mean one of your whims gratified now? Or do you mean you and everyone you love and know over some reasonable span of time? Like,
so
what do you mean by
when you're talking about whims, I think you're talking about something that's more dopamine. When you're talking about morality, you're talking about something that's more serotonin and more ultimately satisfying.
No, what the fuck? What the fuck is wrong with the young generation of debaters bringing neuroscience in? Fuck this shit. I feel that it's a little more like serotonin-y. It's like you're talking about brands of weed. Oh, it gives you a more serotonin high, you know? You don't know these things. You don't know what serotonin, dopamine do in the brain. You know fuck all. Because I have a PhD in neuroscience, and I know that we don't know. These people are fucking making me frustrated. I swear. I hate this guy.
Fine. So you and I agree on a lot. I mean, when it comes to talking about how men should be masculine and things of that nature, you and I are 100%.
You're not masculine. You started with the soyest of all possible intro. What the fuck is happening here with this air?
In agreement. We just don't agree on the justification that God is the only thing that provides morality.
It's not a justification. It's a definition.
What's the difference then? between a definition and a justification. I mean, it's ultimately psychologically the same thing.
Well, we have to define what we're talking about before we can just debate.
Okay, well,
right?
So
yes, there is a distinction between between justification and definition. So a definition is kind of an objectively standing semantic construct. A justification is a reason for belief. Now, it has all sorts of components, but it's much more complex than a definition. You can accept a definition from someone else. You may not accept their justification. You can accept literally any definition for any word. And allow a kind of internal debate to occur. Whereas justification, you're going to have to adopt the other side's position if you do.
So here's my position.
Said that God...
John Drake says, young generation, bro is 50, lol. Yeah, well, but he's a novel debater. I'm an old school guy. I'm not going to call this guy old school just because he has gray hair. You have to have a history. You have to have... you have to have gone on the crucible. You have to have gone through the process. I've gone through the process. I'm an old debater. He's a young debater.
Among other things.
I'm actually a non-theist. I'm not an atheist. I believe the human condition is one of uncertainty. And what that means is that I don't believe that you can conclude there is a God with certainty. And I don't believe that you can conclude that there is a God without in the same position. Now, with that, I don't care. I still wake up every day and I have motivation to be a moral person.
Define moral.
Moral, what I ought to do.
Okay, and how do you come to that
And what I ought to do, ultimately, it comes down to...
So all of this to say you're a moral being. You could have started this 3 minutes ago. 3 minutes ago, you could have just said, hey, I have morality. Okay, but it's not the point. Have you derived your morality through science? Have you derived your morality through empiricism? Have you violated the Hume distinction? No, you didn't. So you're not arguing against what Jordan Peterson says. So then you have to say Jordan Peterson is right. That's it.
What not just benefits me, but what benefits the entire planet, what benefits the entire system.
I'm a very moral being. I care about the planet.
I think that your entire moral perspective comes from linear thinking. And when you look at the reality of the universe, it's actually more so holistic. So when you look at how Aristotle defined God, when he said that there had to be an unmoved moved or an uncaused cause, he was defining God from a linear perspective. And you do the same with morality, and you do the same with purpose.
How does my definition of morality hypothetically differ from yours?
Because you're saying that there's something that exists in a vacuum, that it exists in and of itself, and nothing in the universe exists in a vacuum. Nothing exists in and of itself. It's a whole systems-based morality. It's a systems-based reality.
Is there a
and
hierarchical
that is
structure?
What the quantum...
Is there a hierarchical structure? Are some things more important than others?
Are some things, I think some things lead to more benefits than others.
Then, by your own definition, some things are...
If you have a system of preference, you have an hierarchy. If you if you prefer vanilla ice cream to chocolate ice cream, you have an hierarchy. If you prefer receiving $40,000 than receiving a hammer hit on the toe, you have a hierarchy. You have a linear... set of preferences, a vector of preferences. This thing is better than this thing. If you have such things, you have a moral system. And that moral system was not extracted from science, therefore, Jordan is right.
They're more important than others.
Yes.
Okay. What is
pause there?
I'm so frustrated that we have here people being baited to argue against a point they don't need to argue against, because it's true.
The majority.
How you doing?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I guess since you said...
I think I like this guy.
Morality and purpose.
Or maybe it's the other guy after.
Purpose cannot be found in science. It would just depend on like what you're referencing. If you're saying a description of your psychological preferences would be considered within science, sure. But I don't think that you have to say that it comes from science in order to be like an atheist. As an agnostic atheist, I don't know if God exists and I don't believe that a God exists.
But this guy gets it. See, the first Two guys didn't get it. This guy gets it. Science can describe my preferences. Science could explain how I got my preferences. But my preferences don't need to be derived by science. They don't need to be empirically derived. I'm a moral nihilist, let's say. I believe that my preferences evolve through natural selection. And so I do prefer vanilla ice cream. I do prefer not murdering people. But it's not because of science. It's because of my biology and my brain.
The only ones that I would really reject would be like the all-knowing, all-powerful, all-good, perfect notion of God that plenty of Christians like prescribe themselves. So I guess
how is that relevant to this claim?
You're basing a position of morality and purpose in some like notion of God that isn't the same type of notion of God that typical Christians would prescribe. Your notion of God is
what typical Christians?
Yeah, typically when I talk to Christians, they say that they believe in an all-knowing.
How about Cardinal Newman, who defined God as conscience? He's a major influence on all of Catholic social theory. How about that Christian?
Well, if you talk to Christians in modern times, they talk about agentic God, and atheists will tell you that they deny agentic God. Atheists don't tell you that they deny conscience. And so whatever this guy said doesn't matter, because atheists don't mean that they deny conscience when they deny God.
Sure. So do you believe in the all-knowing, all-powerful, all-good notion of God?
What do you mean by believe?
What do you mean, breakfast?
I think it to be true.
That's the circular definition.
Listen, this is where Peterson restarts on Slimy. See, whenever he's faced with a guy who understands what he's talking about, he goes back to the Slimy attitude. If you debate, you believe in things. you know what we're talking about. Someone was pointing out on Twitter, if I came to you and I asked, do you believe that you're gay? You wouldn't know immediately what I'm talking about. You would not start to do a meta opposition of, well, what do you mean belief? What do you mean gay? What do you mean? No, we all understand what it means. You've been talking about beliefs for 30 minutes with these atheists. And so you know what it means. Be honest and respond to the question.
What do you mean when you say you believe?
How is that circular?
Because you added no content to the answer by substituting the word true and believe.
I don't agree that it was a circular definition. Belief. What I would answer to this question, what is belief, is having a model of the world formed as being your best approximation of what the world is. So you have a belief. I have this pen. This pen exists. I have a belief in this pen because I have a model of the world. And if I attempt to do my most accurate model of the world, my most in tune with the universe, that model contains a pen. There are false beliefs where I could be fooled that there's a pen, but there's no pen. But your best attempt at developing a model of the world is your state of belief. People are talking about testosterone replacement therapy on the chat. Do I have an aging crowd? Do I have an aging crowd? Because you guys would talk about 4chan 8 years ago. You guys would talk about edgy Jewish black people subjects 4 years ago, and now you're talking about replacement theory, testosterone replacement therapy. We're becoming old, gentlemen. We are not the edgy little boys that we used to be, and I am sad. I am sad to see this.
I said, you think it to be true.
All right, so if What's you believe something, you stake your life on it.
What do you?
This is where equivocal attitude of Peterson trying to be hyper-emotional. If you believe something, you stake your life on it. absolutely incorrect. There are all sorts of beliefs you wouldn't stake your life on it. Like if you flip a coin in front of me and you just show it to me for a fraction of a second and then you hide it. And I'm like 60% sure that it's heads, but 40% sure that it's tails. And you're like, Jeff, is it heads or tails? I could say, I believe it was head. But if you then ask, Jeff, would you stake your life on the fact that it's heads? I would be, no. I believe it's heads, but I'm not staking my life on it because I have an uncertain degree of belief. There is no synonymous relationship between wanting to die for something or being willing to stake one's life on something and believing in something, precisely because the space of belief is continuous and you have certain beliefs that you're certain of. You have certain beliefs that you want to be certain of, but you're not. You have all sorts of attitudes with respect to belief. Wanting to die is not the definition of belief. So equivocation, again, for Jordan Peterson.
What do you mean by that?
You live for it, and you die for it.
And he adds the emotion in his voice, like, you die for it. Well, okay, but there are things that I believe in that I wouldn't die for.
That's what I mean by that. It isn't something that you say. It isn't something that's associated with logical consistency. It's not
It's not your breakfast. It's not the khaki jeans that you own. It's not your furniture in your new condominium apartment. It's not your mother's smile. He's doing a Fight Club style intro.
Declarative. It's not propositional. It's not a figment of your imagination. It's the presupposition of your attention and your action. And you're either...
No, what you're talking about here is a central belief of your life. Maybe a central belief of your life qualifies as this. It's not belief. Belief is a much more broad term.
Either fragmented, in which case you worship multiple gods, or there's some unity at the bottom of it that makes you an unstoppable.
I see that a Bitcoin button has just appeared below the chat. What does it mean? What is it trying to say?
Force.
Okay, so you're saying that you don't believe something if you wouldn't die for it?
Not really, no.
Okay. So
well, can we have partial beliefs? Can we have uncertain beliefs? Sure. We can have all scales. You can have a belief in which I would be willing to lose an arm for that belief, but I wouldn't be quite willing to die. Like, I would bet my arm against $10 million that this is true, but I wouldn't bet my life.
So then, how would you define belief? Something you say? Well,
belief doesn't have to be absolute. Belief can be relative, probabilistic, uncertain.
Okay, so I explain, like, I could believe it is the case that this pen exists, but if someone, like, threatened my life, right, I would lie in order to be able to save my life. Right. Like, I think you would do that.
This is a basic thing. Anyone would do this, including Jordan. Now, amazingly, Jordan is going to try to make the case that, no, I'm so self-sacrificial, I would die for the pen. Bullshit, Jordan. You wouldn't even die for answering a question about Jews. So let alone die for a fucking pen.
Do that too. You wouldn't lie to save your life?
Don't be so sure.
The dark Jordan rises. Don't be so sure.
You wouldn't lie to save your life?
How much do you know about me? I didn't lie.
Well, I know that you were unable to answer a question about the genocide of white populations that is currently ongoing. Because it was about the Jews. Because it was making a parallel between what happened to people in Ukraine and what's happening in white people in Western society right now. And you were unable, despite the fact that this parallel was made by one of the heroes, one of your intellectual heroes from Russia.
I had to save my career. I didn't.
And you said to this, I can't do it. I can't engage with the truth on this question. You therefore lied by omission.
Lie to save my clinical practice?
No, but you would lie to save your Jewish funding.
Would you lie to, like, save your children, your mom, your dad?
I don't think lying would save them.
No. And here he's trying to refuse the hypothetical. Refuse the hypotheticals. I don't think lying would save them. It's not the question. The question is a hypothetical aimed at evaluating your willingness to say a lie in certain situations. The most extreme situations, even if these situations can't happen. Ultimately, a hypothetical seeks at identifying the order of your set of axiomatic beliefs about morality. It's not relevant whether it can happen or not.
Can there ever be a circumstance, logically, that lying could save someone's
life?
Yeah,
and if you're steeped in sin, you're likely to live in circumstances like that.
This old cowboy attitude. Yeah. You know you got in trouble if you ever get to that point, boy.
I'll give you an example. If you're like in like Nazi Germany, and it is the case that there's like Jewish people in your attic and you're trying
to
protect
the
them,
example.
Would you lie to...
He's calling out the example as already known before it's even revealed. Of course, the classic case of there's Jews under your plank boards.
Like the Nazis.
I would have done everything I bloody well could, so I wouldn't be in that situation.
Would you lie?
So refusal again with the hypothetical with respect to Nazi Germany. Listen, hypotheticals are very simple ways of determining the order of your theoretical set of value. They are not meant to even be all the time possible. But it's the question is important still. You still have to address it. Now, Jordan Peterson, how does he refuse the hypothetical here? Invents a time machine in which he can either flee or fix Nazi Germany before it becomes Nazi. I mean, literally, that's what he's saying here. He's saying, I would have done everything I could to not reach that point. He's saying he would have fought on the everyday on X, making sure that Nazi Germany doesn't become Nazi. He would have expelled the troll demons, the anonymous accounts. He would have pushed them back, these racialist haters, anons. And Germany would not have become Nazi. That is what he's saying. Time machine invention to escape a hypothetical.
It's a hypothetical and it's not answerable.
You can't answer hypotheticals?
No, I can't answer a hypothetical like
what?
That because
did
it's
you eat
far...
today?
Look,
did you
don't
eat today?
Play games.
I'm not playing games. I'm just
yes,
asking if you ate it today.
If you present me with an intractable moral choice that's stripped of context and you...
It's not intractable. It's very easy. Even I'm one of the most edgy guy in the world. Okay, in the fucking world. And people hate me for it. And I love it. Even I... might say, you know, I might save the Jew, you know, because I don't like authority, I don't like persecution, I might hide the Jew under my floorboards. I wouldn't want the Nazis to shoot the Jew. But whether you answer yes or no to the question, it's very easy, it's not intractable, it's not like... there's a dozen different sins. No, it's like, would you want the Jew to... You understand that this is all framed with the idea that Jews are good, Nazis are bad. And therefore, it's a very easy moral choice to say, I would hide the Jew. It's not a morally intractable system. Precisely, it's the most easy ever designed to extract an answer from Jordan. And yet he fails at answering it.
back me into a corner. You're playing game. I just told you.
You're not being pushed into a corner, Jordan. He's just trying to get an answer with the easiest possible moral problem.
I would do everything that I could to make sure that I'm never in that situation. By the time
you... So you would have a little sign at the border of your house that says, Jews not welcome, do not come to hide under my floorboards.
You've got there, you've made so many mistakes that there's nothing you can do that isn't a sin.
That is not even correct by his worldview. You can easily hide the Jew. Clearly, the moral example is designed for you to have this escape. You can hide the Jew below your floorboards. It's what's sinful about this? And this is what the guy will be asking.
Being born in Nazi Germany and in trying to protect people that you care about, like you, there could be a Jewish friend that you have and you want to protect them.
I think you should just give up on that line of questioning.
He wants to shut down the line of questioning. Amazing. It's the easiest moral problem ever. I'm the biggest artist in the world and I know the answer. You hide the Jew under the floorboard. Like if I was playing a game on PC and I'm in that situation, the Nazis are coming in. I know how you win the game. You hide the Jew under the floorboard.
Give up on just like trying to clarify your position? Because you don't like, are you like uncomfortable with me asking this question? It's just a basic hypothetical. Like I could ask
you. It's just a basic hypothetical. Yeah,
like, it is the most basic hypothetical in the history of Western civilization. It is literally designed so that a six-year-old can know what to do. It is the simplest moral choice. Now, if you're an edgy guy like me, you think of different ways you can twist and, can I make experiments with the Jews after I saved them? If you're an edgy guy, you're going to think like this. But if you're Jordan Peterson, and you're a normie thinker who loves Israel, who loves Jews, this moral problem should be the easiest.
Jews' lives at stake in Nazi Germany, that's just a basic hypothetical.
Obviously, you would lie in that scenario to save their life, but you're like not trying to answer this question some reason.
I just told you why.
Are you anti-fascist? Like, so you're...
This guy is good because he's spinning down Jordan with the easiest moral problem ever. If you cannot answer this moral problem clearly, you can't answer a single moral problem clearly. Because it is the easiest. The easiest, Jordan won't even do it. So this is how Jordan likes to blur. This is how Jordan likes it blurry. He likes it so much that he won't give a clear answer to something that we all know what he thinks is the moral good here. Hide the Jew.
Why are you asking that?
I was just asking, just clarifying. But like, okay, again,
you're and here he's triggering Jordan now with, are you anti-fascist? And here anti-fascist, of course, has this double meaning. That was a good one. It was very provocative to bring anti-fascist, like, are you against Nazi Germany? Because they are fascist, but at the same time, Antifa is this modern movement that has little to do with being truly anti-fascist, but that has more to do with being anti-current society, anti-liberalism to an extent.
You're not answering this hypothetical because you know it shows that you clearly would lie to save someone's life.
I'm answering it in a manner you don't...
Of course you would lie.
Find acceptable.
Obviously, because I care about truth.
I wouldn't be in that scenario.
Obviously.
This is such a stupid refusal. What if I put you in that scenario? What if despite all of your best effort, you end up in that scenario? What if you're in a computer game and you're just trying to do the right thing to win the computer game? How about that? All computer games are possible. All scenarios are possible in a computer game. So you're playing a game of Portal. You enter a door. You have no idea what the door will bring you. Poof, you end up teleported in Nazi Germany. How do you win the game, Jordan?
Obviously, right? Logically, because that's already happened. Like, that's in the past. You don't have a time travel device. We're bringing this logical hypothetical up to show you that in some circumstances that do happen within the real world, you would lie to save people's lives. So your definition of truth isn't actually how we're typically using it. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to...
Absolutely. Absolutely correct.
...to muddy the waters when I ask you, like, do you believe this? Do you think this to be true? So you don't actually have to answer the questions. And plenty of Christians don't like that because they clearly see that you don't really, like, want to be associated with Christianity.
I can imagine that I was in a situation where... the best I could do as a consequence of my previous mistakes was to tell the least amount of lie I could manage.
Okay,
but fine. That would likely indicate that I had made all sorts of catastrophic errors on my way there.
So, amazing. Jordan believes that if he ended up in Nazi Germany and they're knocking at the door and the Jews are under the boards, he believes that it would be his fault that Germany was taken over by the Nazis. This guy has such a high opinion of himself that he believes that if you ever end up under a regime that is fascist, it's your fault. It's at least his fault. And he considers that if he was to find himself in Nazi Germany, if he had let this happen without going to combat the troll demons, without going out there to fight against the Nazis, that he would have committed massive mistakes. Therefore, that if he wasn't committing those mistakes, he could have saved Germany from becoming Nazi. That is the implication here. I can't understand his words otherwise. It seems to be what he believes.
So right. You would lie to save someone's life. So again, you do believe it to be true in that circumstance, even though you like lied in that scenario. So
not without the context that I put it in.
You were not willing to die for it. You were not willing to let other people die for it. So that's not what you see to be true then, seemingly.
You're doing exactly what I said you were doing at the beginning of the conversation. You're generating an impossible, restricted, hypothetical.
It's not impossible. There were people in Nazi Germany.
With no precursors to back me into a corner.
How is it possible? Is there something contradictory about it? Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too.
Great conversation. Yeah.
My next claim is that...
people say that the stream froze. Hopefully we are back. Look, we have now addressed claim number two, and I would tend toward concluding the show anyway. Okay, we are back. Frog Eyes says back. The stream is back. All right. So, in conclusion, this is less of a loss moment for Jordan. I would say it was a pretty balanced interaction until the end. I would say at the end, when Jordan gets onto the whole refusal to engage with his state of belief, to engage with hypotheticals, he shows a degree of desire for blurriness that is unacceptable in debate. So refusing the hypothetical here may be the biggest sin of this section of the debate. Other than that, I would say that the debaters were very poor. The atheist side was very poorly represented here, using words like "I feel that," doing some moral faggotry at the beginning. This last one was the only one truly pinning Jordan Peterson down. So I will give it as a part two, I will say 0-0. It's a neutral outcome and an equal performance on both sides. They were both bad. Let's see what we will have when I do part three tomorrow. Claim three.
Everybody worships something, including atheists, even though they might not know it.
Oh, and this is going to be very bad. Because here Jordan is simply redefining worship to mean human attention. Like, why? If you want to talk about human attention, talk about human attention. So now worship is human attention. So now if you love your wife, you worship your wife. If you kind of like this girl, you kind of worship this girl. It's like, okay, but... so then atheists worship things. And it's like, well, if I use your redefinition of the word, atheists have attention driven to things. And the only attitude you can have in debate against such a ridiculously true claim is you have to sit in front of the debater and make the debate uninteresting. You have to say, I agree with you. I wouldn't use the word worship because you just redefined it in your way. But if I use the word attention, if you're telling me that as an atheist, I attend to different things with different levels of attention, I agree. I worship things by your definition. And then you shut up and you let them stand in silence in front of their own stupid attempt, which unfortunately we're not going to get because the young debater doesn't have these techniques. They don't understand. They think they always have to debate. So they debate, they debate, they debate. But silence is a powerful tool in debate. Those people who have seen me debate, you know I'm using it a lot. Silence is a powerful tool when the attempt of the other side is so clearly wrong. So, yes, atheists worship things if you redefine the word worship as attention. That is the outcome of part three, which we will be talking about tomorrow. Until then, much love to you all, and I'll see you all tomorrow.